From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 30th day of April, 2021. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And we'll take up the weather forecast. To that with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. He's been thinking about the dry weather in South America, conditions out west in the United States, and what it all means for corn production across the planet. And we'll do all of that right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand. Anytime you'd like, you can do that at WILLAG.org. That's WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Today was first notice day for corn, so the May contract had no limit for the trade, and it finished 38 cents higher at $7.40 a bushel. July at 673 and a quarter finished up the 25-cent limit. Expanded limit will be 40 cents for it on Monday. September corn at 592 and a quarter, 21 and a half higher, and December futures up 17 and a half for the new crop at 563 and three quarters. May soybeans up 28 and a half cents, settled $15.71. July at 15.34 and a quarter bushel, up 32, and November new crop up 21 cents at $13.39 and three quarters. The bean meal up $3.40, bean oil $2.47 higher, in July wheat up 5 3/4 of a cent, and the soft red at 7.34 and three quarters. The hard red wheat at 9 higher at 7.03 and a half. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the May contract, rather June, 52 and a half cents higher at 116.57 and a half. The May feeders at 133.60, down $2.25, and lean hogs in the May $1.40 higher at 110, 12 and a half. Mike Zuzulo, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago. I was paying attention earlier in the day and then came back here to talk to you at the close, and smokes, things changed a lot. What was it that kicked it off?
Well, I think the big thing that kicked us off, Todd, was the deliveries were very, very light for the corn. And I think that helped kind of keep the bull in charge. And while the beans had a negative price action and the wheat didn't look so great, except for the Minneapolis or the spring wheat complex, that pretty gave us a pretty good base of support for any kind of news that would come out. And I think there's two things that came out, one extremely important, one somewhat important. The extremely important thing was the Safra-Sea Mercado came out with a total corn crop forecast cut by almost 8% versus their prior estimate down to 104 million metric tons. And that compares to USDA's April number of 109 million tons. And so that's confirmation that Brazil's crop is in trouble. The Safrinha crop especially in trouble, and there's not a lot of relief. And I think that's maybe the second part of this Brazil news, is that the crop's damaged and there could be more damage to come. And I think the trade wanted to price that in by taking out that 720 and a half high that we had had in front end corn. Second thing that came out was crop ratings in France came in much lower than what was expected. The dry spring so far in France is reminiscent of what's going on in the northern plains and in southern Canada. And I think that also spooked the market. And I think that was a big reason why the canola and the soybean oil markets were able to really fire up pretty nicely. In fact, the July bean oil able to get up to limit up on the trade on Friday. So similar to what we saw, what was it, Wednesday, where we had a sharply higher limit up move in both corn and soybean oil, seemed like Friday was kind of the same type of track and mindset.
Yeah, for December corn, I was concerned, I suppose, because, and we're still well off the high that was made earlier in the week, that it might close lower for the week, but I don't think it did.
No, it's not going to at this stage of the game, because the July corn and the July soybean oil both were able to close the limit up, and now we go into expanded limits on Monday. May obviously is not in limits, and so May corn was able to stay up about 37 cents. And notice what that did to the wheat corn spread. Until the very end of the trading day, we actually saw wheat go negative to the corn on the lead month contract by about 3-4 cents. And so, you know, we are just driving this train hard, and we now see a wheat corn spread that looks a lot like 2012, 2013. The feeder corn ratio is down at 10. That is down to the lowest level since 2012, 2013. So the funds are on it hard. It will be interesting, though, Friday, and I'm not trying to beat this market back, and I made that point pretty clearly, I think, on Commodity Week. While I am nervous about demand, I'm also nervous about the funds being long and the length they're carrying in both bean oil and corn. It'll be interesting what we see Friday on the Commitment of Traders report.
Yeah, so it'll be fun to watch that. You are concerned about a couple of things. As we look forward into the grain stocks numbers for June, because it is now cheaper and has been for some time to feed wheat, not only around the rest of the planet, which happens fairly often, but here in the United States, are you concerned about demand for corn, or is the market just in the process of really making that happen so that we cut back and we stay at a higher level still?
Yeah, I mean, I think yes to both of those issues. I'm concerned the export sales for a third week in a row showed us that we continue to ration demand in almost everything. And it is clear to me that the corn market by the cash basis levels we're holding in the interior being up as high as the Gulf price, that we are trying to keep as much corn as possible. But there's a big distinction between corn and soybeans. One is we're importing or thinking that we're importing soybeans into this country because South America has excess. The other is that the South Americans are actually losing crop of corn, the supply and the crop of the corn as every day ticks away. So that corn bean spread, that corn bean ratio will probably remain very, very active here in the next 10, 12 days until we get to that next WASDE report on the 12th of May. I think the other thing that came out this week in the bigger picture, longer term mindset, Todd, is that African swine fever issue you and I've talked about for many, many months. The attaché for the USDA came out on Thursday, Friday time period and really said it very bluntly and said that Chinese swine herd rebuild that the central government and the officials in China are suggesting is just really very unlikely at this point. It's a counter perspective, as he put it, as what he put out in terms of they're not rebuilding as fast. Producers are not wanting to rebuild as fast in the hog herd because they haven't gotten it under control as much. So it could still be that China has double booked soybeans, whether it's because they were worried about weather or whether it's because they didn't realize they wouldn't have the hog herd that they're going to have in the second quarter of 2021. So again, that keeps the beans more of a liability in the big picture.
Was today a good day or a bad day for commodities?
Oh, I think today was a very, very good day when it comes to the sentiment and momentum indicators. But when you talk about food crises and you talk about issues with demand, and it is reminiscent of 2011, 2012 to me, where we're going up so fast that the market can't catch its breath and we're cutting demand off at the knees. And that's why we're 3 cents discount in the wheat compared to the corn.
And you'll have to catch me up. How quickly did we run up in 2012? Are we well ahead of that this year?
No, we're actually, it's really interesting. When I do a run over of the 2008 and 2012 Dease corn and Nove beans, and I've been sending this out to clients about once a week now, it's amazing how close we are in price to 2008, but that we are running very, very closely in corn at least to 2012 in terms of price trend, and kind of the exact opposite or almost the exact opposite in soybeans. But those are still two very, very good years to use as a counterbalance and to think back what did happen to demand back then.
Yeah. So the difference being South America, while it was playing in the soybean market, really wasn't playing in the corn market at that time.
No, that's exactly right. And I think one of the things that is different, too, is that we just have a completely different scenario with coming out of the pandemic. And, you know, one of the things that we saw Friday was a very sharp rally in the dollar. And I think that's due to the pandemic hurting the European growth and starting to really eat into the Asian and the Indian growth potential that, you know, some of these big companies or big intelligence agencies like the IMF and World Bank just got done ramping up all these GDP numbers. They may have to walk all those back because of what's been going on. So this is where the dollar comes into play. And I, as I told a client, I would not put the weather against the dollar in terms of thinking that you have a sustainable rally because of weather. If the dollar starts to rally, I think you still want to sell into this market.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Mike Zuzulow is with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. On this Friday, we're joined by Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions, as usual, to take a look at the weather forecast for the growing regions across the planet. Hi, Eric. Boy, it's a great day in the Corn Belt today.
Yeah, we've got a little bit more time with this, too. So not only today, but tomorrow and even into Sunday, we're going to get some decent conditions. Although it's going to be kind of windy, we're going to really get those temperatures up there tomorrow into the upper 70s and might crack 80 on Sunday. So yeah, I'm certainly going to enjoy a nice warm weekend.
Tell me about some of the severe weather that parts of the United States suffered through earlier in this week.
Yeah, so we've had a lot of nasty weather down in the southern plains. And so some huge storms putting down some extremely large hail. You might have heard about it in the news or seen it maybe on the Weather Channel, but some of those hailstones were 3 to 5 inches in diameter and doing a lot of damage. And then that was all a part of a weather system that actually gave us precipitation the middle of this week that stretched from Texas clear through to Ohio. Now, rain we got around here was pretty great, right? I mean, that was a nice soaking long rain. That's exactly what we need because our subsoil moisture is still lacking here in this part of Illinois. But the flooding we saw in Missouri, getting into Oklahoma, parts of northern Arkansas and Texas has been very problematic. And that's been an area that's been quite wet throughout this year. Just something else to think about. Throughout the month of April, the West Coast has measured very, very little precipitation. This would be the end of their wet season. And at this point, from California clear to Washington State, they may have just had their driest April in the last 129 years. So there's some concern. We saw the drought monitor continue to get worse in the West as we kind of pulled through this last week here of April.
Did that have a great impact on snowpack that feeds into the northern plains as well?
Well, it does. And at the same time, we've got some pretty quick early spring melt. So what would be ideal for irrigation purposes is to have slow snow melt from, you know, this point in April all the way through July, such that we can, you know, just put that moisture back into the ground and into the river systems and reservoirs at a good pace. But the West is going to go quite warm here over the next 10 days, which is going to accelerate some of that snow melt.
And will they have wind as well? They usually do.
Yeah, they usually do. And we will too, by the way. So this weekend, we could be getting some stronger winds coming through here. They'll be out of the south, but they'll be cooking along better than 30 miles an hour. Some places even faster than that on Saturday. So yeah, it's normally a windy time of year, March and April. But this is a little bit of an exception here with how strong these winds might get on Saturday.
What does next week look like?
All right, so I'm watching two things. We've got a system that's still hanging out in Texas right now, and it will finally start to move out, and it could spread some rain to us on Sunday night and a little bit on Monday. Then again on Monday, really in the afternoon and evening hours, and watching it on Tuesday, there's a system that's coming out of Colorado at that point and could possibly give us another chance at some precip. So we're going to start off next week a little bit soggy. And then behind that, we do have a bit of a cool down, but cool down is relative when we're talking about May. So I'm talking about highs, you know, there in the mid 60s for central Illinois, possibly a little bit warmer than that as we do kind of endure just a little bit of a cooler time period midweek next week. But the moisture return to this side of the Corn Belt is critical. We need it this time of year. Yes, it chases us out of the fields, but I'd rather get that down and in that top 3 feet now and rather than worrying about it in June and July.
What do we know about the month of May?
Well, the longer range models just got some brand new data this morning. They're really trying to hang on to this cooler pattern that stretches out of the Canadian prairie into pockets of the Western Corn Belt. And at this stage, while we still are calling for better chances at seeing a more mild May in terms of temperatures compared to normal, I'm not expecting May to be quite as warm as I had in previous weeks. It seems to have backed off just a little bit. I do not have right now any reason to be worried about a late frost that could get us in early May. And we know that it happened a year ago. I'm not seeing that. But maybe having some of those overnight low temperatures, you know, getting down there into the 40s, we're probably not done with that just yet. Maybe a couple of nights of that. So overall, though, we'll make the break and we'll go. And I do believe we're going to see some windows open up to get the rest of this crop planted. Not nearly as wide open as they've been for our neighboring state of Iowa, which is probably planted at one of the fastest paces I've seen when you look back over the last week. But it's a favorable month overall. When I kind of paint that picture for ag.
Lastly, turn your attention to the southern hemisphere. What are conditions like from your perspective in South America?
Yeah, well, they would want to have a May that would be giving them well above average precipitation. So, and the reason why I say that is southern Brazil, where we grow about 40% of the safrinha crop, that would be Mato Grosso do Sul through Paraná. That particular area, there's a lot of that area. And just so you know, that would be the size of putting Colorado, Illinois, and Indiana kind of stacked up together. That's how big of an area we're talking about. They didn't receive rain in the month of April. Big section there. And so the safrinha crop, which was already late, has continued to be dry. And the forecast for now, even through the month of May, is not retaining moisture there, nor is it bringing it to the northern growing areas in Mato Grosso. The monsoon normally shuts down anyway, right? I mean, May's normal precipitation compared to April's, it's about a third of what April normally gets. So here we are struggling with this safrinha crop, which had potential given the acreage, but we'll likely have the numbers pulled back here. And it'll be interesting to see if they pull that number under 100 million metric ton on corn. We should be getting those reports pretty soon.
Anything further northward to talk about? Mato Grosso is the largest corn-producing state, I believe, also the largest soybean-producing state for that matter, though that crop's now in the bin.
Yeah, the soybeans are done. And again, they missed out because of the late planting and some struggles and then a very wet harvest on having a huge, huge soybean crop. But the problem will be in May that the slowing of the monsoon means that late planted safrinha corn is not going to have ideal moisture to hit huge yields. And therefore, I don't expect the production numbers to be as large as they could have been. And we've all been hearing about, you know, Brazil's purchasing lately. And even though some of it's been rumors, it kind of just tells you what's going on down there with their supply, their domestic supply of corn.
Hey, thank you.
Yep, thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and joined us here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online at WILLAG.org.